Hi, everybody, and welcome to Lecture 22 in this American History program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. We're going to be doing our first facts practice today. So for the benefit of everybody on the recordings and everybody in the live class here, I'm going to be talking a little bit about the exercise and staging it on this one day. And hopefully, over the course of the next few days, as we do it on a daily basis, it's going to become a very easy and straightforward exercise for everybody. So let me go ahead and share my screen with you guys and remind you of how to get to the facts practice file, in case you are not clear on it. Here is the junior high class webpage, and we are still in October, so you would click on that. And that would carry you through once the link actually gets to where we are going, assuming I actually click on it and the History at Our House server responds. There we go. And you scroll down to the most recent material, and you will see right there, Junior High Facts Practice 1A and 1B. We're starting with 1A, so it's as simple as clicking on that. And that document comes up, and depending on how your computer works, it displays on your screen. You can print it off from there because it's a PDF, which is a very printable type of a file. And so that it's as simple as that. You should have multiple copies of this to practice. So what we are going to do is I'm going to start a stopwatch, and I'm going to give you guys 4 minutes to write the answers down. And in this particular class, we are going to be shooting for 2 minutes as an outcome. So that should be kind of the target. It should be less than 2 minutes to get this done. In fact, using a few tricks here and there, it should be maybe a minute and a half, depending on how quickly you write. I'll give you some tips on that. And so what we're going to do is this. And for the benefit of the people on the recordings here, I'm not going to be recording the exercise. In the past, I have done so, but I think it's probably kind of an annoyance for people to have to sort through the facts practice. So I'm going to pause the class recording when we do the exercise. And I'm just going to say to you on the recordings, if you are a student doing the recordings, there's no reason why you cannot and should not meet the same standard as the students who are in the live class so that you can get the same benefit, the same outcome, which is learning the material. So if we're doing a facts practice in class, you should be doing a facts practice on the recordings. That way, you get as much out of it as the people who are in the class. So I'm not going to record the facts practice exercise. I'm going to pause the recording. But while it's paused, you also should pause the playback of this class, and you should do your facts practice and try to reproduce as closely as you can the work that the students are doing here in the class. Okay, so the way that we're going to do it is a little different than in past years. Okay, what we're going to do is I'm going to have a stopwatch right on the screen. And you are going to keep track of your own time and simply write it down. Okay? So when you are done, rather than raising your hands and having me call out, you're just going to record your own time right off the screen. And that won't interrupt anybody else. Okay? And then at the end, I'm going to do a quick check with everybody to see that how well you are, how comfortable you are, and so on. Okay, does anybody have any pressing questions before we do our first facts practice drill? If you're not ready, as I said, too bad. Have it printed and ready for the next class. All right, we got to proceed here. Okay, so doesn't look like there are any questions. So now I'm going to pause the recording of the class and and we're going to have this 4-minute drill today. This should be the only time that it requires 4 minutes, but I want to give you guys a chance, if you can't do it faster, to do it within 4 minutes. And then I'm going to get your feedback on whether or not it's enough time or not, and so on. So we're going to pause the recording and go through this exercise and see how well it goes. All right, here we go for the pause. All right, so thank you. We just did the exercise in class, and I want to just give everybody some tips on how they might be able to accelerate their effort. So for instance, I'm going to go here down to number 6, who, what, where. And so, Piper, what did you write for number 6?
Number 6? For who, what, and where?
Mm-hmm.
Who, founding fathers, what, Declaration of Independence, when, 1776 AD, where, Philadelphia?
Okay, I mean, it's not structured that way, so I don't know. I mean, what did you exactly write in this blank space?
Who, what, where? I just read it in a different order.
Well, read it in the order you wrote it.
Oh, okay. Who, founding fathers?
No, don't. No, you didn't write the word who. Don't read the question. Just read the answer.
Oh, founding fathers, Declaration of Independence, Philadelphia, and then for when I wrote 70s.
Okay. All right. So that's all right. So that was your approach. So, all right. I'm gonna. So, founding fathers, so you didn't write a sentence, you wrote 3 different data points, and then you answered the 4th question. Okay, which is fine. Okay, definitely no problem there. But I wanted to offer you one little tip on how you can accelerate it even more. So yeah, you could have founding fathers, right? And then sign. All right, so that is kind of a Mr. Powell quick and dirty facts practice answer. So notice what I did there, of course, right, is I took this really long-winded expression, which is incredibly important, but nonetheless, right, really long-winded. So instead of writing Declaration of Independence, I wrote DOI. Now, I'm going to say that this is okay, but I want you to tell me when is it okay and when is it not. If you write DOI, what do you have to be able to do? Keen?
Well, I'd say you have to be able to immediately associate that with the Declaration of Independence. If you have any sort of, if you see that and you don't immediately know that that's Declaration of Independence, then it's, you know, it's harming you in the long run.
There you go. There you go. Exactly. If you write an abbreviation or acronym that does not have an immediate association for you in this context, then that's not good for you. Then instead of practicing something that you know, you are repeatedly writing down something that you don't know. Now, what good is that? I mean, that is just perverse, right? That's even going to feel bad if you do it. If you're just sitting around writing stuff down that you don't understand, that's going to be really weird. So don't write an abbreviation like DOI unless it works for you. Unless you can look at it and instantly know that it's Declaration of Independence. Okay? So, likewise, up here, do you really need to write Christopher Columbus? How about that? Good enough, right? I mean, if you don't know it's Christopher Columbus, then you probably should write it. And if you don't know AM period stands for America in this question, well, okay, you should write it. Okay, but hopefully it's going to work for you, right? So if it does, go ahead and abbreviate. The exercise is not designed to be a painful exercise in terms of constant writing and, maybe your script is not as fast or you're not as comfortable. All right. That is not, the important thing. The important thing is a quick exercise, as painless as possible, to practice your recall. That's it. Just to practice emphasize and strengthen your recall ability with regard to basic facts. All right. So consider that while you are preparing, you know, to do your facts practice this evening, and you want to speed it up, think about how you might make it faster without cheating, without writing things that you don't know, right? But instead of writing World Trade Center, you can write WTC if that works for you, okay? And so on. All right, so that's my one word of advice for those of you who are at the, you know, more in the 3 to 4 minute range. If you want to speed it up, you can use abbreviations, but you have to just make sure that your abbreviations make sense. Okay? So good luck with that. We are going to redo Facts Practice 1A tomorrow. And we're going to see how much of an improvement everybody's able to make. And probably redo it on Wednesday. And again, measure your improvement. Along the way, I'm going to test everybody so that you're not permitting yourself to write stuff that doesn't mean anything to you, right? We don't want any parroting going on here. We want recall and thinking. So I'm going to ask you about the who, what, where, when. And I'm also going to ask you about the so what. So you need to be able to articulate that. And what we're going to do is I'm going to be introducing a new exercise to go along with this very shortly. Once we've mastered this kind of recall exercise, I'm also going to make sure that you're not allowing yourself to do it in a manner that's actually going to harm you. I'm going to encourage you to do the thinking that's required to back this up. So we'll get to that exercise shortly. Bria, go ahead.
I have a question about number 7.
Yes.
I put down ITP, International Trading Port. Is that okay?
No, nobody recognizes that. It's not international trade. Nobody has ever used that expression. So you're going to have to use WTC, World Trade Center. And it's got to, I mean, that has to be the acronym. Okay, good question. I'm glad you asked because if you say terrorists destroyed the ITP, nobody will know what you're talking about. It has to be in your mind, terrorists destroyed the World Trade Center, and WTC for short. Okay. All right, let's go now back to our theme for today, which is Before the Rebirth. Lecture 22 is where we're at here, and we have completed part one of the course. And the point of part one was to set the context for our studies. In other words, for us to know what the big picture is that American history fits inside of. So let me now bring that up. Let's see here. I might have to... There we go. Okay, so the timeline probably that's on the class webpage as well, I hope you've got a printout of it and it's on your wall already, is, I think, the best representation of that. The timeline that shows us everything from 3000 BC all the way to 2014 where we are, right? And it has the images from our facts practice and so on. This is kind of the best representation of the big context, of the big picture or the full context of American history. American history is just this thing over here. This little short story over here. Made possible by this prelude of activity once America was discovered. But American history is just this thing here. It's really the last chapter in this history of the world. Leading up to it, we've got a lot of things going on. And in order to make sense of American history, we need to know what came before, because if we're going to be talking about people in America generally being Christian of many, many different denominations, well, how do we make any sense of that? Well, we have to refer back to this. If we're going to be talking about people, about the people in America living under a certain kind of government, well, where did that come from? And we're going to be talking about that today as well. How did that ever happen? And how normal is that compared to what human beings have had throughout all of history? How special is it? Because it's amazing, but I am struck by the fact that Americans are not properly aware of how special America is. I think some people are, in a kind of surprisingly ignorant way. They're just kind of rah, 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 cheerleader, America is the best kind of type of attitude. And then on the other hand, there are people who are maybe a little bit more educated, but in a bad way, and who have a very kind of negative sort of view of America. It's very striking. And I don't think anybody, it's very rare to find nowadays people who are very historically literate who really get it, who really see how special America is in the full context of world history. That's what this timeline is helping us to start to grasp. It's certainly not the whole story. The whole story would have to include comparing this to the history of Asia, to the history of Africa, to the history of the Americas, and so on. And it would be a really, and all that would end up doing is showing us how even much, 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 much more special America is. So it's a remarkable thing. And it's part of studying American history properly is getting that, is seeing where we are in terms of everything that's ever happened. And one of the most amazing things... Okay, we have somebody arriving who didn't mute themselves. Ashton, okay. All right, careful with the muting there. All right, so one of the things that is really kind of shocking about grasping this big picture, for instance, which I want to point out to you guys today is, right, history is not full of freedom. History is not, it's not normal for human beings to be free in history. In fact, for the entire first half of history, I don't know if you guys noticed that, but this is half of history right here. Right? History is approximately 5,000 years. And this right here is the first half. About 2,500 years worth. And where's the freedom? Where is it? There isn't any. Nobody has it. Wow. Nobody. Isn't that shocking? There isn't any. What do people have? Everywhere. Now, we don't know that for a fact based on our studies. I'm asserting it, and you, in a sense, have to trust me. But what do people have everywhere? They have kings. Right? In Asia, they call them khans. In Persia, they call them shahs. In Egypt, they call them pharaohs. In Europe, they call them kings, and so on. But it's the same everywhere. There is no freedom for the first entire half of the story. And so this is part of what it means to grasp the context for American history and how special America is. That needs to be appreciated. So today, we're going to be diving into that a little bit further. We're going to be diving into that a little bit further because when we look over here at America and we see the creation of this free country over here, right, we know that, well, it's not absolutely and completely the first ever. We know that there were earlier attempts. And so when we're going to be trying to understand how American history goes and how well it goes and what is good and what doesn't work out and so on, what we need to understand is that American history is not the very first birth of freedom in the history of mankind. Basically, American history is the rebirth of freedom. There was an initial attempt. There were people who started working on this question, on this challenge, on this problem, way, way back here. Halfway through what we think of so far, right, as history, recorded history, there were people in Athens and Rome who were thinking about such things and were making their best attempt at it. They failed, however. And only by 1776 was there an opportunity for somebody to come forward and try again. So part of what we're going to be talking about here in this Shaping of the New World segment, or part two of the courses, this rebirth process, the creation of the United States is, in a way, the most important accomplishment, the last and final and most important milestone in a rebirth process. And it's a new era, but it goes back to something way, way back. Now, Ashton, that was highly original, what you just did, and I don't ever want to see it again. Ashton, I don't know how you did that, and I don't want you to feel bad that you did, but I definitely don't want icons like that in the class. I think that's going to be really distracting. Sorry. I know you were clapping. It was really cute, but that was very, very weird and distracting. And you know what's going to happen is now that if people know that you could do that, that's what people are going to focus on, making icons, which is going to be a waste of focus. So none of that. Thank you. Okay, so we're going to be talking about this rebirth process, and it's already marked on here. Right? And I kind of hinted at it in our review and preview class last week. It's a period in history. And it's quite a long one, and it's kind of a difficult one to understand. And it's kind of intriguing because the period has a French name, Renaissance. Renaissance is a French word, not an English word. And it is a word that means rebirth. And what we're going to be struggling to understand here is what was reborn. This world that we live in, this modern world that we are in, is the product of a rebirth of something. And there is a something specific that was reborn. And Columbus is a representative of it. And the Founding Fathers are representatives of it. And it's a wonderful thing that they did, and we live in the result of, because there was a time when this thing was gone. It was missing. It had died. Almost. You could say it was in a coma, in a way. And Europe was stuck in a dark age. And only thanks to the fact that this was reborn, mystery ingredient that we want to know what it is, only because of the return of this wonder was it possible for the modern world to emerge, for there to be this new and modern type of civilization that we live in. So this is a really crucial theme, because we want to understand, if by studying history, what we want to understand is, how did our world come to be the way that it is? We live in a unique place. There's never been anything like it ever before. It's completely unique, this high technology, scientific, globalized, interconnected world that we live in. Never been anything like it before. It's a marvel. It's the absolute best time to be alive ever in history. So how did that happen? How did we get to be in this wonderful place? It's certainly not perfect either. So what are the problems that we have? And what can we do to make the world even better than it is? We certainly don't want more of this kind of thing down here. Right? We've got wonderful positives in it, and we also have serious, serious problems. Right? I mean, if you guys have been watching the news lately, what is that? What's the latest danger involved in globalized, interconnected life? What's happening? That's got to have, you know, it's got people really kind of scared, right, Bria?
Ebola.
Yeah, and where does that come from, as far as we know?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean by what scientific process, but where does it always seem to emerge out of? What location?
Isn't it South America?
Nope, not South America.
I really don't know.
Okay, all right. Anybody know? Timothy?
Africa.
Yeah, it always seems to emerge out of Africa. That is the most tropical, most kind of natural, wild continent with people who have a very primitive life and not very good sanitary conditions and so on. So it seems it's kind of the dark, it's been called the dark continent. And so, yeah, it always seems to be the source of some of these terrible, terrible things, diseases, and Ebola comes from there. Well, but you guys know, you must know, if you're following the news at all, and your parents are probably talking about it, that there are cases of Ebola in America. Now, how can that be? Well, in the past, that did not happen. There haven't been cases of Ebola in America before. But why are there now? Why are there now? How did it get from Africa to America? Pretty straightforward. Sadly, tragically, and dangerously. Right? How did it get from Africa to America? Anybody know? I mean, not abstractly, Bria, you're right, by globalization, but what does that mean? Keen?
Well, we're all interconnected, and that means that people can come to America in a few hours on a plane.
Exactly. So somebody who was sick, who had the disease, got on a plane and arrived in America. And like you said, in a few hours. So, wow, this is a challenge of interconnection. Here that now we are so much closer to each other that things that used to be local or and isolated and separate are no longer. So now we have new problems and we have to be able to deal with those. If we want to be able to enjoy the benefits of interconnection, we also have to watch out for the dangers of it. And of course, here's another danger of interconnection. Those wonderful things called airplanes, the Wright brothers and others like them invented, they make our lives incredibly wonderful. At the same time, they're dangerous in certain ways. And we have to adapt to that. Right? So, yeah, it's a challenge to live in this wondrous modern time. And part of the skill set or the tool set that we want to build up is an understanding of exactly where we are and where that comes from. That's kind of our objective here, is to follow the story of how we get from that European world and how, well, through some process, we don't yet know what it is, there's a renaissance, and we come, and then we get globalization, we get this amazing world that we live in. How did that come to be? Okay, Timothy, put your hand down unless you have a question. So, what we're going to look at here is we're going to start with, in order to understand this concept of the Renaissance. And by the way, did I ask and did I confirm, does everybody know what Renaissance means? It's a French word. What does it mean? Again, just to check, just a quick checkup. Micah, what does it mean?
Rebirth.
Okay. All right. So rebirth. So, and it's one of those nice two-part concepts that involves the integration of two different ideas, right? It has a prefix and it has a suffix, and it's a really interesting concept. In other words, we have this idea of a birth, and then we have the prefix re, which tells us what? just by, you know, pure analysis of the word, what do we know? What does it reveal to us? And what should we be looking for? What does the re part tell us? Sophie, what does re mean at the beginning of a word?
Again,
such as, give me another example. What if you had to replay a game?
Do it again.
What's another example?
I don't know.
You're on the spot. You're freezing on the spot. You had to rewrite an essay because you didn't answer the question properly. You'd have to redo the work. What else? It's a re at the beginning of a word. Okay. So, anyway, you get the idea. Okay, so, rebirth. So what does that tell us? Just like when we encounter the Second World War, it tells us something, right? What does it tell us if we're talking about a period in history called the rebirth, Bria?
Well, it typically means it's happening all over again.
Yeah.
So it's like everything's starting over again. Like,
yeah, so in other words...
There's nothing. There's like literally nothing, and you're starting completely over.
Well, yeah, almost. Now, so watch out on that one, Bria, because, yeah, we have to be careful here. When we're talking about the rebirth, what the concept means is that there was a birth in the first place. You know, the re part says doing it again. And then the birth, well, that tells us that there was a birth in the first place. And then, there's a death of some sort or, you know, some kind of death process and then you have to get start again, a rebirth. All right. So now we have to watch out there, Bria, because in a case of something that happens in history, it's not necessarily the case that something is completely dead. We might be describing a situation in which, as it turns out in the Dark Ages, that really what you have is this thing that existed is almost completely dead, but not quite. And if it had completely died, it's probably not possible that it would be reborn. It would just disappear entirely. But there was a tiny fragment of it still, like an ember, and then it was revived, brought back to life, and started to really take off again. So we're going to be talking about this. And so the question is, where was the birth? And what is it that was born? And what was it that was reborn? Right? And then how, as Bria is talking about the metaphor here, who added the fuel to the fire? And what did they do? And how did they get that flame burning again? And what are we talking about? It's a metaphor here, but we need to get down to the real truth of it, the facts of it, not the metaphor. All right, so the first thing that we're going to talk about is that we already have this indication from our anchor facts that American freedom is not the first instance, not the first ever. It's the second. There was kind of a dual birth over here, the twin birth of freedom, back in ancient times. And that's our first hint about this rebirthing process, is that it extends all the way back to Greece and Rome. And in the political sphere, those people had forms of government which we don't find anywhere else. They were born, they were created or invented for the first time ever back in Athens and Rome. And then they disappeared. Over here, for all of this history in between, we have monarchy again. So it was lost. And then America's founding fathers created a rebirth of freedom. All right, so what was the birth like in the first place? It's part of what we need to understand in order to understand the rebirth. So the first thing that we need to look at here is democracy. We've got two parts. We've got kind of a twin birth at the beginning. And we have other things that are being born as well, and along with them. And all of them are related to one basic idea. We're gonna have to discover and detect that common denominator that fuels all of this progress and all of this wonderful things. So democracy and republic are going to be our first clues about what that is. So let us talk about first democracy. So this is a word that I imagine quite a few of you have encountered before. It's not entirely foreign word. But it's very important to understand this term correctly. And one important way to do that is to go back into a dictionary and study it. And if you go to dictionary.com and you look at the word democracy, you will see some pretty vague definitions and some pretty misleading ones, quite frankly, until you get back to the actual word origins and history of the concept, and you dig into it right here. And you will see that, as it turns out, the word democracy comes from French. And then it comes from, as you notice, Latin, the language of the Romans. And, well, who did they learn it from? The Greeks. So the chain that connects us to the concept democracy, which is the English word, it goes backwards through French, through Latin, and through to the Greeks. The Athenians of Greece were the inventors of democracy. And their idea for it was, well, they had this one notion called the demos, the common people. And then they had this idea of kratos, a ruler, or to rule. So what they were thinking was, we're going to replace monarchy, the rule of one. So here we go, right? We've got monarchy, the rule of one. We're going to replace that with democracy, rule by the people. Demos, the common people are going to rule. Okay, that sounds kind of better, doesn't it? Instead of having this exclusive club with these people who think they're better than everybody else at the top, and, you know, the Menes Narmer type of guys, that they're going to, where's my Menes Narmer character, right? This guy here, the rule of one, we're going to have, well, rule by the people. Okay, so it sounds kind of nice, it sounds kind of better, but what does that mean exactly, rule by the people? How does it work? What does this concept of the people mean? This is where we get into a little bit. We have to do some careful analysis, because otherwise we're going to have this woozy notion and it's going to be very misleading. So what does that mean, the people, Micah?
The majority rules.
All right, so you have already drilled down right through the concept, and you're down at the end here, but I don't want to leap all the way down there. I want to ask you, what does that mean, the people? Because you will hear this, as I can't stress this enough, actually. You will hear people, notice how often I use that word. You will hear a lot of people nowadays talking about, and they'll use a variety of terms. That people nowadays will use the term the people. They might also use the term the public. You'll often hear also this expression, the common good. There's a kind of axis of words that are used by certain kinds of thinkers and to promote certain kinds of ideas. And so it's something to be aware of and watchful of. So what does this mean? When you see somebody use that expression, the people, what does that mean? Well, we have the at the beginning, right? What does it mean, the, as opposed to a, for instance? It's a specific thing, the. people. Which ones? When somebody says the people, what do they mean? What is it generally intended or understood to mean when somebody says the people? Keen?
Well, they're trying to say people outside of government, sort of everyday people, which is very sort of, it's confusing and misleading and weird, but that's what people generally mean, you know, people who aren't in the government, just someone you could meet on the street.
All right, you're getting there. Really, what they're saying is everyone. Right? What they mean is everyone rules. Everybody is in charge. Everybody kind of is contributing or working together somehow to come up with the rules. That's the kind of fuzzy, you know, idea that people have. As you were noting, Keen, you're kind of trying to note that, well, actually, there's people inside of government, there's people outside, and there's all kinds of different groups. Now, what you're noticing is, well, it's a very difficult word to pin down. It has a general meaning or connotation that means pretty much everybody. Everybody participates. Juliet, did you want to say something about that?
Oh, I was just going to say that it sort of means like the general people and the people of the country that you're in.
So generally, it means people generally. It means all of the people in any particular country, right? Everybody in a certain country, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, right. So that's fine, and that's kind of what everybody's thinking. Oh, it's the people, and it's everybody. Okay, well, the truth is it's not, of course. how does that work when everybody is going to make the rules? Well, as it turns out, in a place like Athens, where there were only tens of thousands of people, the idea was that pretty much everybody would get together. Not necessarily everybody at one time, but everybody could participate. Every person, and yes, back in ancient Athens, it did mean just the men. Nowadays, when people think of democracy, they think of women as well. But back then, in ancient times, it was just the men. So when they said everybody, already it was not really everybody, but it was all the men getting together. And then this group, well, would rule. Well, okay. Meaning what? As a group, it would create a set of rules, but how does a group rule? And this was where Micah was already leading us to this important identification. But how do groups decide things, Bria?
They take votes and they decide by the majority, like who. If there's a lot of people that say this thing, but there's a lot less that say this thing, most likely the people with the group with more people is probably going to be the group that gets whatever they want.
Yeah, right. So in a democracy, what you have is people vote and you tally up the votes and the majority, which means more than half the people decide one thing, then that's the thing that's adopted. The law or the rule or the regulation. Okay. That's the thing that gets imposed. But the thing is, when you have the vote, there's another group over there. When human beings are together in groups, it's far likelier that they will have dissenters and disagreements, right? I was just earlier today, it was funny because I thought it was a really good example. My son and I were walking the dog, so we were a group of two, and that's about the simplest, smallest group you can have, right? And we had a very simple decision. We came to the end of the sidewalk and we had to go left or right. And he wanted to go left and I wanted to go right. So here we were, the simplest possible group, making the simplest possible decision, and we couldn't agree. And so when people get together in groups of 3 or 3,000 or 3 million or 300 million, as America is today, right? Are they all going to agree? Of course not. And the more complex and the more difficult the decision, of course they will not agree. So what happens is when you get a group together, the people, so-called, they vote, and the majority rules. rights. So this is the crucial thing about the concept democracy is, let me be the only one to chat here for a second, right? Democracy is supposed to be the people rule. But there's no such thing. When you get a group of people together, inevitably they disagree. They have to sort it out. So democracy means the majority rules. So democracy is majority rule. Now, if you had to choose between being ruled by one person or being ruled by a large group of people, which one would you prefer? Keane says democracy. Yeah, I mean, the key here is recognizing the common denominator, which is the concept of being ruled. So the correct answer is, it would be nicer not to be ruled. It would be nicer to have a society in which people are free and where it doesn't matter what size of group the rulers are. There aren't any, in fact. There aren't any rulers. There's some kind of different arrangement. Is that possible? Well, we're going to have to ask ourselves that question. And the Founding Fathers thought so. And so they did not want the United States to be a democracy. And they specifically designed it to be something else. They called it a republic. So we're going to look at this, the subtle differences and important differences between these two ideas. Definitely, democracy involved something that was better than monarchy, and it's something worth thinking about. In typically countries that are democracies, and we have a lot of modern examples of them, life is better than it was in monarchies. So history does tend to show that democracies are better. However, it also shows that a republic is best. We're going to have to come back to that tomorrow and look more closely at the initial twin birth of freedom and think about what this other idea is that goes alongside democracy. Okay, that'll do it for today, folks. Remember to practice your facts practice, and we'll come back and pick things up at this point tomorrow. So bye for now. Thank you.
Mr. Powell, thank you.
Yeah, bye.